When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So what happens if you take that thing off? They come after you and kill you?
No. You just can't ever put it back on again.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica. This week we're covering The Mandalorian Season 1, Episode 4, Chapter 4, Sanctuary. Before we get started, I have a Star Wars question for the week, which I was nice and warned everyone about this time. Did you get my message, Rich?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. So this week I want to know who your favorite character in all of Star Wars is and why.
So we're drilling down here. Last week was favorite movie, and this week is favorite character.
Next week will be harder. Favorite body part.
The favorite costume or something. All right, Rich, tell us who it is.
I am going to go with Darth Vader.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah, I like Darth Vader. It's okay. All right, so I wrote a few notes on why. So we start off with Anakin Skywalker, right? So we got the six movies now. It kind of gives you an overview of his life. He started out fine, happy little boy. He wanted nothing more than to become a Jedi. And he did. He went on to follow that dream and grew up eventually, you know, training with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then he falls into the wrong hands of the dark side because he lost his mother. And then he was upset about losing his wife. Sorry. He was upset about losing his wife. And it's an origin story, if you will, of like a would-be superhero, right? That panned out, and this is why he's my favorite. It panned out to be a realistic version of what would really happen to anyone here on Earth if we got the ability to use force or any kind of superpower. Let's be honest, right? I mean, how long would it take for you to start abusing your powers and start
choking your boss
you because they frustrate you? I mean, yeah, you can't even drive for 5 minutes without getting road rage, right?
You'd just be swiping those cars out of the way.
Whoosh. Hell yeah. And I think everybody would be like that, you know, to an extent. So in the end, you know, he on his deathbed, he admits he could have handled things differently, and everybody forgave him, and all was good, so it all worked out in the end. But I think it was pretty realistic what happened to that guy. I identify.
I love how one of your main points is that if everyone got, like, basically superpowers, they'd immediately start misusing them.
They just become Darth Vader.
Exactly. Right. We'd all become evil against our best intentions.
You know, I mean, as you were saying that, I'm like, well, it's actually a supervillain origin, and a lot of times in comics, the villain and hero origins are pretty close or similar, you know? Something tragic happens either way, but I guess it just depends on the character of the person it's happening to. But yeah, maybe, I mean, it's a bit of a cynic point of view, but to think that most people wouldn't just go out and become superheroes, I think is pretty realistic. I don't know if they'd all be Darth Vader.
Yeah, my views have become cynic lately. Sorry about that.
No, I mean, of course, who among us geeks has not wondered, okay, what it would really be like if people got powers? I don't think people's first instinct would to be to fight crime necessarily. It might be to go and try to do some good in some ways, but I just think it's funny how in comics you either fight crime or you become crime.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd use it mostly to improve yourself.
Yeah. I think so. I wanted to mention, since you mentioned Darth Vader, I just rewatched this YouTube video that I found, I think last year sometime, that's amazing. It's some fan who's a whiz with special effects, and I don't know how he did it actually, but he did a reimagining of the lightsaber battle in Star Wars between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah, that's cool.
I think I have, yeah.
It's so much more dramatic, because if you go back and watch that scene after you've seen the subsequent lightsaber battles, it's pretty silly.
It's slow.
Yeah, but I got to put this in the show notes. Anyone listening, I highly recommend you check it out. It's just super cool. Anyway, Chris.
Well, when you asked me the question earlier today, my first thought was, does the Millennium Falcon count as a character? And right. I decided that for this question, it probably doesn't, but it, you know, it is my favorite ship of all time. But that being the case, I decided to go with Han Solo as my favorite because, you know, admittedly, he's a real stereotype of a character. But when I started thinking about it, you could probably say that about almost all the characters in Star Wars. So yeah. I didn't hold that against him. You know, he's the scoundrel with the heart of gold. He's a really flawed hero. He comes off being really conflicted about joining the rebellion, but not really, because you can tell he wants to do it, you know, no matter what. And he has some of the best lines in all the Star Wars movies. So I had to go with Han Solo. I wanted to be him when I was younger. And Han Solo, he's the man.
You totally succeeded.
Yeah.
I mean, I can wear a good Han Solo costume, but that's about it.
Have you really done that?
He was a cool dude.
No,
and he shot first.
And he shot first.
Of course.
Exactly.
There's goes without saying.
Goes without saying. Absolutely. No, I've never actually done a Han Solo costume, but next Halloween, making that high priority.
I knew this. Two friends of mine, one of them, the guy wore the Leia costume and the girl wore the Han Solo. That's pretty cool for Halloween.
That's a great idea. I like that.
That's cool.
So mine is probably a pretty boring answer, especially considering how many characters there are in all of Star Wars now. But man, those first three movies are so iconic. And I always identified with Luke Skywalker.
Right.
He was my favorite. And especially because he started off with these meager beginnings and he had dreams of escaping it all and going out into the bigger world. And he's kind of the underdog. And Han Solo, I always liked, but those kind of characters in movies, I more felt jealous of, you know, or I was like, you know, in Star Wars, you don't yet know that Luke and Leia are brother and sister, and you can see he's attracted to her. So I was like, get away from her. That's Luke's. That's how I felt about it. Of course, I love the character. I love all those characters. Han Solo is awesome. And really, The Mandalorian has a lot in common with Han Solo as far as being this kind of reluctant hero, and you know, like in this episode, he needs to make sure there's enough money and things to get out of it for himself before he'll go and help the villagers. That's a lot like early Han Solo.
Sure, yeah. And you know, I think choosing a favorite Star Wars character is like choosing your favorite kid. They're all amazing and they're all different a little bit, you know. Rich, I think Darth Vader is a fantastic choice too, because he probably undergoes the most change or development through, you know, all the movies. And he's one of the best villains of all time.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets on lists of most iconic characters of anything, any pop culture, you know. Darth Vader is on there. Yeah.
100% the most recognizable and just one of the best villains of all time.
But I really feel like the prequels diminished him. I didn't need to see all that. I would have rather just seen him in his darkness.
But you don't want to experience the story. You don't want to be raised with Anakin Skywalker.
I don't know. Another great Darth Vader scene is the one in Rogue One.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. That made the movie right there.
Yeah. That's so cool. Yeah.
I had a little tears in my eyes. I was like, oh my God, it's Darth Vader. The way he just mowed through those people. It was crazy.
If you guys haven't seen Rogue One yet, Darth Vader is just a small part of it, but it's worth watching the movie just for that scene.
I'd be surprised if anyone listening to this hasn't seen Rogue One.
I think Mandalorian, is attracting people who aren't super well versed in Star Wars, maybe? I don't know. Maybe. But speaking of Mandalorian, let's get into this week's episode. So it's our top three highlights for Mandalorian Chapter 4, Sanctuary. What did you guys think in general, Rich?
Overall, I thought it was really good. You know, I was kind of curious where they're going to go with the child. So first, right out of the gate, they found a babysitter. So the child, you know, didn't really have much to do with the story. I mean, he did have a lot to do. He's like the backbone of the story, but he didn't have a lot to do in this episode except be like super duper cute. My God. He didn't interfere with Mando's adventure. You know, he just got to be cute. And then I watched it twice. The second time I watched it, I couldn't help but to notice, you know, the cowboy and Indian theme kind of going on here. And then, you know, it also had a little bit of a Lord of the Rings vibe going on, you know, we're like in the Shire, and then those orcish looking dudes showed up and ransacked the village.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, this is like every samurai movie ever made. But then as it got closer to the end, I settled on it was just its own episode. It was its own show. It held it well. And it kind of felt like a little nod to the past adventures on the moon of Endor, you know, with the
Ewoks.
ASTS. Yeah.
Yeah. With the technologically advanced versus the primitive.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Seven Samurai is Akira. How do you say it? Kurosawa. And George Lucas took a lot from him over the course of Star Wars. The Hidden Fortress is
right.
Huge influence, and even this movie, A Seven Samurai. But in this case, I do feel like it's definitely just like very much inspired by that story.
Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah, I just wrote down a little bit about it. So Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai is a 1954 Japanese samurai drama co-written and directed by Akira Kurosawa. It follows the story of a village of farmers that hire seven ronin, or masterless samurai, to combat bandits who will return after the harvest to steal their crops. So it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Seven Samurai or The Magnificent Seven?
I've seen The Magnificent Seven, yeah.
I don't think I have.
Okay, because I've only seen Seven Samurai, and it was a long time ago, and I've never seen the U.S. sort of cowboy remake, Magnificent Seven, but this episode was almost the same thing, really, which doesn't really bother me at all, but it was highly, highly influenced by those, I guess by Seven Samurai, primarily, yeah. As it was the original, but it was basically the same thing.
Yeah, that's how I felt, too.
And it's just Jon Favreau, you know, he's just borrowing from a lot of different aspects of Star Wars, one of which is to base something off of an Akira Kurosawa movie. So I think it's cool in that respect. But I also, watching through it, I'm like, when they're showing the villagers how to fight, I'm like, man, I've seen this so many times. And
right.
And so it felt a little bit standard and predictable in that way. But I mean, I still liked it a lot. It was probably my least favorite of the four, but I still liked it a lot.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, once I got to the end, I'd forgotten all that other stuff, and I was like, "Ah, this episode, you know, made it its own." It was pretty cool.
It had some great moments for sure. What about you, Chris?
I thought it was a pretty good episode, but I must admit, I had to watch it more than once to really start to appreciate it, and I ended up actually watching it four times because, the first time I wasn't so sure. After I watched it through a second time on my own, I started to feel much better about it. And then I finally convinced my kids to try and watch this show. I had to tell them that there was something really adorable in it that they're going to love. And so they finally sat down and watched it. But of course, they watched this one first. So I watched this episode with them for Baby Yoda, and they fell in love with it. And so then they wanted to watch it again, and I ended up watching it the fourth time.
Are they going
to
watch the first three?
They've actually already gone back.
Yeah,
so
nice. Cool.
That all
how can you resist? Come on.
No, how can you resist? Exactly. That all happened today. But my original first watch feelings were like, you know what? This episode is a little inconsequential to the greater storyline. You know, it's sort of self-contained, and it was cool, but you know, I wasn't so sure about it. And then after all these other watchings, I started to appreciate everything I saw, and I kind of ended up seeing it like a bridge between the first half of this season and setting up everything and what's going to happen in the back four episodes, sort of paying it all off, right? Yeah. This is kind of a, this is a bit of a break in between, and I ended up really just enjoying it for what it was.
I mean, I think we got some pretty consequential things with The Mandalorian, which I'll get into later, that happened. But for the most part, I think you're right. It was self-contained, and much like episode two when he had to go get the Mudhorn egg. But like I said back then, I don't really care if a story is inconsequential to the greater storyline if it's a good story in and of itself and if it's enjoyable. I say do as many of those as you want. I just want to be entertained and to be moved. And this one didn't move me quite as much as some of the other ones, but I'm the same as you. Watching it multiple times, I think I saw it three times, I liked it more and more each time.
Yeah. Yeah,
100%. And Jason, I don't know, I don't remember if you said this on the podcast or when we were chatting before, but it was early on, maybe before our first episode, and you told me that somebody suggested that we call this podcast Mansplaining the Mandalorian. And I must admit that came to mind a little bit because this episode introduced what I thought were two really awesome female characters, and now the three of us dudes have to sit here talking about it. So
yeah,
I hope it goes okay.
Yeah, we need to, before the season's out, we need to have a female guest star, guest co-host.
Totally.
We'll get it worked out. Okay, Rich, what's your number three?
Number three was what we just mentioned. It was a great segue. The introduction of the female characters. I mean, I think we all kind of knew it was going to happen, obviously, but, you know, I don't want to sound offensive or anything, but I think it's going to be really good for the show, and it adds a lot to my personal fantasies about the show.
So now you're going to get the mansplaining version.
Yeah,
here we go.
Absolutely.
Pretty badass.
You know, I'm going to interrupt here because Gina Carano, I think is her name, or Carano, I knew of her before because back when Walking Dead cast first started 9 years ago, we did an episode where we picked the five people we would want with us in the zombie apocalypse. And just kind of as a funny thing, I went and looked up like really hot, tough women, and Gina Carano was one of those. And so she was one of my picks.
Right on.
And she also, so it was fun to see her pop up in this, but she also popped up a few years back in Deadpool. She played Angel Dust in that.
Oh yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. She was badass for sure. She kicked Mando's butt, but you know, we're introduced to her. We're also introduced to what was her name? Olga? No.
Omara.
Yeah. Omara, who obviously has a backstory. I mean, what's up with her shooting skills? That cracked me up. Everyone's missing everywhere, and she's like, pow, 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 pow.
Yeah.
Acing it every time, right?
That makes me think they're probably going to go back to her, huh? Because it seemed like maybe we're done with those villagers in that planet, but that one little bit where she's the only one who knows how to shoot and they never explain why makes me feel like maybe we'll go back to her.
Right. I couldn't decide if that was setting up a comeback or if, you know, it was just done so that the Mando found her attractive.
Oh, because, could be.
I think it would work. And then, you know, what was Kara? She was an ex-Imperial warlord. No, she was a, what was she? She was a shock trooper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she fought against ex-Imperial warlords, which I thought was a pretty cool backstory.
Yeah. A shock trooper is basically a person who fights on the ground, a soldier, and an infantry person. And she was doing that as part of the rebellion, but then after the Battle of Endor and the politics set in, she said, then it became just sort of escorting. What did she say?
She became a peacekeeper.
Yeah, and it was. She said that's not what I signed up for. So maybe she got bored with it or something, and now she's
right.
She says we'll just say early retirement, but that sounded a little mysterious.
And just one more thing too. When she was kicking Mando's butt, I started to think a little bit. I started to get a little bit nervous. I was thinking maybe Mando's not an actual Mandalorian. I don't know. Do you think that's a possibility, or do you think he's just young and maybe still learning how to fight or something? Because he gets his butt kicked a lot.
Well, I think that was we already knew he was a foundling, right? He wasn't born into the Mandalorian. He was adopted by them. So he's not like Mandalorian by blood, if that's a thing. So if that's what you mean, like he was brought into it as a child rather than sort of raised from birth.
Oh, okay.
As one.
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused on that point. I thought Mandalorians were anyone from the planet,
you know,
planet Mandalore.
It's their story is a bit convoluted in Star Wars, and Mandalorians have shown up in the series a lot and the games, and they've talked about their backstories and everything. And it is, if you're from Mandalore, you're a Mandalorian. But I think there's also the Mandalorian that's part of this warrior class, these fighting clans, and they treat it as a religion. So that's almost like a separate thing. And they have all these, what do you call it? This code that they live by. And I think anyone can be brought into that, even if you're not from Mandalore, either that or when the Mandalorian was, you know, his parents were killed and he was a foundling. Maybe he was from Mandalore. I don't know. But either way, he was brought into these warrior clans and taught their ways and got that helmet put on him and everything.
Right.
But yeah, I just think you're right, man. He gets beat up a lot. I think it's probably more... it endears us more to him if he has trouble than if he's just quickly dispatches everything and has no trouble. So I think that's one reason why they're doing that.
That's what I was thinking. I thought I was probably reading into it too much. It's probably just that bounty hunting is a pretty tough gig.
But as far as she goes, I liked her a lot, and I'm glad because I was anticipating her coming on. And it was interesting that he seems to trust her right away. At least he's curious about her and wants to try to get her help. And so I think he sized her up really quickly and realized that she was a good guy. And he even lets her use his pulse blaster later on.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I mean, he left her at the end. So does that mean that was the only time we're ever going to see her?
No.
No way.
She's going to be back.
I think so, too.
You know, the thing about that fight they had at the beginning for me, and this may be stupid, but, and I know it's a Disney show, but I just wish they'd give us a little bit of like a bloody nose or something. Like he punched her in the face a few times and she seemed like no worse for wear. I wouldn't mind a tiny bit of blood on the show when someone gets hurt.
But yeah. I mean, they are, you do see villagers stabbing those bandits, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a lot of, people being shot and killed and stuff, but you're right. That fight seemed a little tame. But I did love the way it ended though.
Both on the ground.
Maybe that's a Disney thing. Huh?
Yeah.
They're both on the ground. No, they're fighting and they hear slurping and they look up and see Baby Yoda and then he goes, want some soup?
Yeah.
Which is cool because then you find out that she assumed he was after her as a bounty hunter and it turns out no. And when he said that, it maybe just sort of disarmed her a little bit and she went for it. Okay, we'll see where this goes.
Yeah, but I also liked in the next scene where they're sitting at the table, she says, I came at you so hard because I thought you had a tracking fob on me.
Yeah.
And that explained the whole fight to me, because before that, I thought they seem to be fighting for no reason here. Why is she so distrustful of him? But obviously
it made sense. Yeah,
it totally made sense. Yeah.
Chris.
Well, so I'll just continue with this for my number three, Cara Dune. Cara Dune and Omera, I thought were great new characters introduced. I thought Gina Carano was fantastic. And her history of being this sort of retired rebellion fighter, I thought actually added a lot to it. Even in the scene that I was talking about there, where she says, you know, we were sent in as small teams alone to clear out ex-Empire warlords, and then we were peacekeepers and riot control. I thought that just added a lot to the sort of post-Empire world that these people live in. And it's just little things, but I really liked it. I thought it fleshed it out a lot.
Totally.
So,
and it made you like her immediately, like, oh, she was a rebel and she was a fighter.
Yeah.
And she must be a badass and all this stuff.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can just see her doing that, right? Mm-hmm. You can imagine it in your mind, going after people like the client or whoever,
right?
And trying to weed out any post-Empire sort of uprisings or anything like that, right? And I just thought that would make a really cool show in itself, watching her go around doing that with a small.
We
team
might
of
see
people.
Some of that.
Yeah,
that's a great point. Kind of, yeah, it really gives you a sense of like the chaos that has ensued.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When any big empire falls, right, there's going to be that kind of stuff going on. And right. I thought it was great to just flesh that out a little bit.
And I assume in this episode that this, which I'm sure we'll get into, this AT-ST walker is just an abandoned piece of mech left over because the empire's gone. And this is what happens when bad guys get a hold of stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. That's chaos. The other thing, too. That's the other thing. When you think about the empire falling that quickly, there's going to be all this stuff left around and it's just going to be up for grabs, right?
So
you have kind of a chaotic galaxy at that point with warlords popping up using really intense, powerful military equipment. And, you know, it makes for a really crazy universe for a while. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was just a fun thing that they introduced here. And I also really love her haircut, I gotta say. I like the hat, like one side shaved with the rest of her hair over the other side. I thought it looked amazing.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Cool.
I don't know if you guys
did. She remind you
thing.
Of Xena at all, Rich?
Yeah, she was. I didn't realize that she's an ex MMA fighter. I didn't realize that she's like the real deal, man.
Yeah. She can kick Mando's ass, but she could kick your ass too.
Oh yeah, that's part of the fantasy.
Totally. And then Omara, the other new character here, I thought she was really cool, too. Obviously, they hinted that she has some kind of fighting past because she's the only one there that could shoot a blaster and she could shoot it really well.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of worried that we're never going to see her again. They set this up and they teased us with her. And now it feels like Mando's moved on and that's it. He's never going to come back. So I'll be a little bit disappointed if that's the case. Mm-hmm. And then I thought it was really interesting that Mando actually opened up to her a bit while he was there. He told her about his past. He was even willing to leave the child with her for good. Like he really came to trust her in this short time. So I think that says a lot about her and a lot about him. And I will be bummed out if we don't see her ever again, but kind of feels like it at this point, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says about him. Oh, this looks good here. Take the kid.
Yeah.
No,
well, I was wondering about that. It's like he went through so much trouble to get the kid and then he pretty much gave up his entire life for the kid. And then he's like going to dump him off the first chance he gets.
I'm mostly kidding, but I think, you know, this is a 40-minute episode, which is actually the longest of the four, but it felt rushed to me that they just wanted to have this attraction and have her want him to stay there. And, you know, you get the idea maybe to be with her and he's actually considering it. And I think, you know, that's all supposed to feel organic. And to me, it just felt kind of rushed, but it's like, well, they had to do it all within this short period of time.
Mm. Yeah. But my biggest criticism of this episode is the time, the time passage or the depiction of time passing. I don't think it was done very well because it didn't feel like it felt like some things were really rushed. And then all of a sudden you didn't know where you were, right? Like after the fight where they destroyed the AT-ST, suddenly they're weeks later, I think he says, and I didn't really get that. So.
I think the reason why they did that was to make it apparent or make it believable that news of this whole commotion would reach bounty hunters that came looking for Baby Yoda.
Right. Yeah, that makes some sense. Yeah. But I don't think it was depicted
weird.
Very well.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Okay. My turn is about just more about what it means to be a Mandalorian. And specifically, first episode, he took off his helmet.
Yes, he did.
We wondered if he ever would. But we didn't get to see his face, and I don't know if we ever will. I mean, when they say it was really interesting when he was telling her, you know, or he's telling actually Cara Dune, you know, she's asked him what will happen if he takes it off. Will they kill him? And she says, no, I just can never put it back on again if anybody sees him take it off. And I'm like, do we as the audience count as that? I kind of feel like now I wonder, will we ever see him take it off? But anyway, we find out he hasn't taken it off in front of anyone else since he was a kid. And, you know, based on also that scene we saw last week with the other Mandalorians, it's really important for them not to take it off. And in front of other people. And so I feel like this episode is about him being tempted away from the Mandalorian lifestyle, which gives us more clues into what the Mandalorian lifestyle is. But that helmet, keeping it on, represents his dedication to that way of life. This is the way, as they say. And in some ways, that's a burden because he's tempted to settle down into this idyllic paradise and let it all go, but he decides not to. And I think, you know, there's some sacrifice that goes along with that, which makes him a really more of an interesting character even than before. And I liked that, you know, she when she reached up to take his helmet off, I was like, man, you always want, they always want him to be undressed, to get undressed. But he almost let her, and he was tempted. And then he said, she goes, wouldn't it be nice? And he goes, it would. And then he goes, I don't belong here. But he does, and points to Baby Yoda. So I'm glad that he made that decision not to stay before the bounty hunter took a shot, because you know that he just made the decision, and that was symbolizing him recommitting to the Mandalorian way. Whether he feels like why that's important to him, we don't know for sure, but he recommitted to it. And then when the bounty hunter took a shot, or was about to anyway, that's when he decided to also take Baby Yoda with him.
Yeah, but the most important thing, as you said, about that scene for me was that he decided before the shot was taken to keep his helmet on. It would have been super lame if the scene was interrupted by the shot, and then like that made the decision for him. I like it way better that he made the decision.
Me too. Yeah. Right. Totally. So we don't know whether he was born a Mandalorian, but I mean, I don't think he was born a Mandalorian in the way that they're talking about, like it as a religion, where he's saying things like weapons are part of my religion, like he said a couple episodes ago, and they're
this
not
is the way.
Yeah, this is the way and all that. So there's this code that they have that's really, really strict that he's choosing to, and that they can only come out one at a time to hide their numbers or whatever that is. Now, in the Clone Wars TV show and in Rebels, the Mandalorians take their helmets off a lot. And one of the main characters on Rebels, Sabine Wren, is a Mandalorian who takes her helmet off frequently. So I'm trying to figure out how we can reconcile this. Those shows both take place before this time period. Clone Wars is between Attack of the Clones and Episode 2 and Revenge of the Sith Episode 3. And Rebels is after Episode 3 and before the original Star Wars. So it could be that this whole Great Purge somehow changed the rules for them, or maybe they're just a certain sect that goes by these strict rules, or maybe the characters that we've seen take off their helmet don't adhere strictly to the Mandalorian way. I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts about any of that?
I think that there it could easily be that there's just, as you said, different sects or different different groups of
tribes,
Mandalorians, tribes. Yeah, they even use the word tribe, I think, that just like in real life, right? There are different denominations of religions that have different approaches to things. Right. And that seems like it would be a thing here. Now, there's not apparently that many Mandalorians left. So maybe this is kind of the more traditional way. If there's less of them, they might revert back to the more traditional way of doing things. I don't know.
Right. But they're like Orthodox Jews or something.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me, though, that there could be different groups that approach it a little bit differently. And this particular one has strict rules about the helmet. You can take it off to eat, and as long as no one else is around.
Right. And you know, when he did take it off to eat, it did feel a little bit to me, well, you're facing an open window there, like someone could walk by.
Right.
Yeah.
Wasn't too careful.
Yeah.
And exactly. It's not like he was in a barn with like wide open doors too. It's not like he was really in private.
Would he like put his hands over his face really quick?
I was really nervous. Did you guys want to see his face when he took off his helmet, or were you like, no?
I didn't want to see it.
No, neither did I. And I think that my feeling has changed on that a little bit since episode one. I no longer want to see him because they've done such a good job of making him a rounded character without showing us his face. Right. So why screw it up now? Right.
Right. And if they do have us look at him eye to eye, I want it to be like way unexpected, awkward, emotional, dumbfounding. I mean, I want to be floored. I want to be pissed because that's, you know, that's how I feel.
What if he's like a Wookiee or something? That'd be funny.
Or if he's just like cross-eyed and has a really bad mustache or something.
Like she takes off his helmet and then she's like, puts it back on.
Right. Never mind. Yeah. you should keep that
keep
on.
This on.
You better go.
But I think that I no longer think that we, the audience, will see his face. And I think we are going to be in that group of people who aren't allowed to see his face, at least for now. And then eventually I have a feeling that'll wear off and we probably will get to see him without the helmet.
Yeah, maybe. You know, the only thing counterpoint to this is I loved Pedro Pascal in Game of Thrones, and he's so charismatic. And I think if we did have a woman guest co-host, she would be agreeing with me right now. And even I feel that way. And I'm like, man, he would, you know, he's a great actor and just fun to watch. So there's that. But still, the way they've built up the story as it is right now, I'm loving not seeing it.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Richard, number two.
Number two was, you know, I think I said my number one first, but I'll go with number
right.
two.
Doesn't matter.
Was the AT-ST. I thought that was cool to bring back some stuff from the originals. I like how they do that every episode. They bring back a little bit of nostalgia from the original movies, but it doesn't really interrupt the story. It blends really well with the story, and it, you know, but gives you a little nostalgia for the old days and so on and so forth. But this one they did a little different. I'm gonna credit Bryce Dallas Howard for doing this. She made it more like a creature than a droid, or, you know, a mechanized machine. You never got to see the pilots that were inside. It was just basically a monster with red eyes. Kind of reminded me a little about Jurassic World, you know, channeling some T-Rex business in there. But you know, it was a bit contrived with the tree snapping and the impact stomping, but it was effective enough to make me yell cool.
No, that was one of the things I loved about it, was taking this piece of mech that really actually kind of seemed kind of awkward when you've seen it elsewhere in Star Wars. We've seen it in Hoth and also on Endor with the Ewoks, where they would just trip over logs and stuff. And, you know, they just seemed kind of ineffective in a lot of ways, easy to trip up. And in this episode made it really scary. And it's just a single one of them. That's what I liked about it. What you just said, that they made it feel like a creature or a droid rather than a piloted thing with its red eyes, and how you could hear the stomping and then see the red eyes coming through the forest. It was just really, really cool. Effective.
And I have a good point too. If you have a village that are fighting with sticks, this thing would be pretty effective against them.
And I also thought, Richard gets his walker, because I think in one of our earlier episodes you said that was one of your favorite things about Star Wars. Yeah. I think that's what you said, the object you said you wanted would be an AT-AT, right? The bigger one.
Yeah, that would be cool. Cruise around downtown with one of those suckers.
Of course. I agree with you guys. I think the AT-ST was fantastic, and it's amazing how menacing it makes it just by giving it red eyes, you know, and having it come out of the darkness in the forest like that. I thought it was great. It was way more powerful than it felt like they were on Endor. But at first, you know, I think Kara says at one point, there's nothing on this planet that can damage the legs of an AT-ST. And my first thought was like, really? Freaking Ewoks just destroyed a bunch of them.
Right.
What about the trees?
You got to trip it up. But yeah, I mean, she shot it with the rifle and it didn't do anything.
Didn't do anything. No, I guess. But obviously there was something on the planet and it was the two of them, because they took it down. Right. It was pretty fun and nice. I thought it was great. It was fun to see.
Yeah. Since we're on the subject too, that's AT-ST, or All-Terrain Scout Transport. They're used by ground forces of the Empire commonly to screen the flanks of larger assault walkers for major ground operations, as we saw on Hoth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like a tank would be better. I don't know if these things are very efficient, but they sure are as cool as hell.
Yeah, I think that's probably what George Lucas was thinking too.
Right.
Chris?
All right. Well, my next one, I think maybe we should talk about a little bit is the direction. Rich, you mentioned Bryce Dallas Howard. She hasn't directed very much before, maybe nothing actually, but of course she's the daughter of Ron Howard, who is
Richie Cunningham.
There you go. Yeah. And a, you know, top-notch director in his own right. And of course, worked on The Last Jedi, right? Didn't he take over?
Did do Star Wars. And I thought it was
Solo. I'm sorry, Solo, not Last Jedi. That's the one I meant. Yeah, he took over Solo. I knew it was a Star Wars movie. So, you know, it's in the family a little bit. And I think she did a great job. That whole action scene at the end, the fight scene with the AT-ST, I think was really, really good. As I mentioned before, the depiction of time passing was kind of bad. It felt like they trained the villagers in an afternoon and then they had this fight and then suddenly we're weeks later because Mando mentions that that some time has passed. So I'm not sure if that's a directing problem necessarily, but, you know, it didn't quite work for me. But I also thought what she did really well is managed to create a strong connection between the Mandalorian and Omera, right? And is that direction or writing or acting? I don't know, but I have to give her some credit for it, definitely, because I felt the connection between the two of those, and I felt the sort of not really tension, but the when they were separating at the end, right? You could sort of see that she didn't want him to leave and he didn't want to go, but he felt he had to. So I think overall, Bryce Dallas Howard, or BDH, as I'm going to call her, did a great job.
Yeah, she did.
Also, you have to give her credit for a strong introduction of this character, Cara Dune. I read an interview with Gina Carano, who said that Bryce Dallas Howard really helped her find the character and let her do several different takes so that she could, you know, feel good about the way it was presented and gave her different ideas and also helped shape the look of the character and all that. So I think that's, you know, important if Cara Dune does show up in the series after this.
Right.
It was good to give her a good start.
And could anyone have made that Baby Yoda more cuter? Jesus.
Yeah. Christ.
Every episode, you think, can Baby Yoda be any cuter? And then he is.
Well, that leads right into my number two, which is the funny and cute stuff. And I think, you know, I keep wondering, when is it going to be too much? But so far, not even close.
Yeah.
I'm like not tired of it. I mean, I think at some point, like, I don't want this show to just be about that, but I'm loving it so far. And that first scene where he keeps touching the buttons in the ship.
Oh, so funny.
Stop touching things. And then he's like going to do it one more time, looking over at him. And then the whole ship. Arr! And I'm like, this is totally my life right now. Because
every kid on earth.
My son, Bodhi, who I forget if I mentioned this already, he's going to be 3 in January, stuck a little Pokemon disc in our PS4 and ruined it. We had to send it off to get repaired. He's doing stuff like that on a daily basis.
Wah, wah, wah.
I think it's no accident that this show is appealing to dads. It's such a dad show because we all loved Star Wars as kids, and now this is a show pretty much about a dad.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought, eh?
Yeah. And when he says, I'm going to find lodging, you stay right here. Stay here. And then the door of the ship comes down and you see him right next to him.
That's such a good joke. Like, it's sort of obvious, but at the same time, I didn't see it coming. It works so well.
Yeah, he's like, all right.
I think Mando's going to be sighing a lot.
And then when he's the whole want some soup thing, when he's slurping soup, that was funny. I loved when they first see the AT-ST footprints and she's like, oh man, I didn't sign up for this. And then you cut right to the Mandalorian addressing all the villagers and you go, bad news, you can't live here anymore.
Yeah. That was great.
That was good.
Great bedside manner there, buddy.
When Baby Yoda approaches that cat creature in the bar, that was pretty good. And then there was the last one I have here is when he sticks the frog in his mouth and grosses out all the kids and then he spits it out.
Yeah. Those kids were great.
I realized that.
Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I realize that the kid is wearing a tiny Jedi robe, right? Isn't he wearing like the same thing Yoda did? It's just a smaller version.
It might be, or pretty close, yeah, which could be significant.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that's going to come into play, but I thought it was cute.
It looks like a tiny burlap sack, just like Yoda wore, so same thing.
And yeah, the kids were good, and I think it helps that that puppet is genuinely adorable, so they can really just let their true feelings about it come out.
Yes, right. You could tell, actually, that all those real-life kids were just in love with the little thing, right? They all wanted to take it home and stuff. But my favorite scene was the one you mentioned right at the beginning where he's pushing the buttons and then Mando says, "Stop touching things." And Baby Yoda just looks at him while he pushes another button as if to say, like, what are you going to do about it, buddy?
And that one was the most disruptive. The whole ship, like, lurches to the side.
Yeah, right. Totally.
That's so funny. Okay, Rich, number one or three or whatever you got left.
Yeah, so what I have left is the tracking fobs. What's up with the tracking fobs? I'm not too clear on that stuff, but I started thinking about the tracking fobs, and then I kind of saw a pattern emerge here where I think this series is going to be, I don't know, maybe Mando's going to hop from planet to planet now, helping the helpless and solving problems week to week, you know, like all of our old favorite shows like Burn Notice or Miami Vice or Cagney and Lacey, I don't know, Lie to Me. You know, but that's fine. I'm done with that because you get to go to a different planet every episode. And all this time, they're going to have these tracking fobs, which will lead the guild to him. And so he's constantly going to have to dodge other bounty hunters. It's a formula that has worked well for lots of TV shows in the past. And so I was thinking, well, if that's the case, you know, we might be doing this podcast for the next 10 years.
Wait, another one for 10 years?
Those formulaic shows are not my cup of tea anymore. I just got so burnt out on them. So, I mean, maybe this show could do it well, but I really hope that doesn't happen. I want the story to shift and change.
Right. Yeah, me too. But I'm a little worried, and that's why I put this in here, that this might be what's happening. You
could
know?
Be. Yeah, that's why I was saying last week, it sounds like they're going to be the A-team now, but I really hope that doesn't happen.
Guys, it's like the X-Files used to do, right? They had the main story that you checked in with once in a while, but they also did the Monster of the Week story, which, you know, you'd do five episodes in a row that was just Mulder and Scully dealing with one particular bad guy or whatever, and then they'd get back to the main story. And that I thought about a little bit with this episode. It was a bit of a Monster of the Week story, which didn't have too much to do with the overall story. And now we'll get back to it next week, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to work for The Mandalorian, but I don't totally hate the idea because, like what you said, Rich, we're going to get to see different things. We're going to go to different planets. We're going to enrich the universe a little bit if we do that. So it might be okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it would be fine, but I hope, you know, if I could get my wish, I would hope it's even less formulaic than X-Files Monster of the Week, that on X-Files, they had the same reason for those episodes. They were investigating some phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I'd like him to have different motivation and reasons and complications that come up over the course of the series that depict his actions versus just, there's more people to help over here and some people to help over here. And now we have an episode more core to, like, they call it the mythology on X-Files.
Right. Yeah. And the X-Files was... I mean, the X-Files was at its prime, what, 20 years ago? Maybe more even? So TV was different then, right?
Yeah.
And so it worked better then.
Yeah. I mean, I think X-Files was part of the shift away from that kind of storytelling because people liked the mythology so much that aspect of series going forward just became more present and the formulaic stuff receded more.
Yeah, it did actually. It
like Lost is the opposite of that. There's no formula.
Yeah.
And that just keeps your brain turned on the whole time because you don't know what the hell's going on.
And we all know how that turned out.
The tracking fobs. Now, there was an article on The Ringer, which is a great website, that speculated they tracked their targets using biorhythms. But then they asked, well, why then would Mando think he'd be safe on a remote planet, and they were speculating that maybe the fobs are only for short term or short distances. So first you have to know generally where someone is, and then when you get close you can track their exact location using these fobs.
Yeah, because if you think about it, if you get a tracking fob and it tells you exactly where they are from where you're at, there, you know, there'd be hundreds of people showing up at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. It's too easy then. And I think it does work the way you were describing, or that article was describing, Jason, because the client had to tell Mando the last known location of the target. He went there and then the fob started working. So,
right.
Yeah. I don't know how that one bounty hunter at the end knew where to go, but.
Well, I think it was somehow, they were suggesting that he somehow got wind of the fight with the AT-ST. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
no, that makes sense.
2 weeks later, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that took him a while to get there.
Okay, Chris, number one.
Well, it kind of ties into just sort of the greater Star Wars universe here, and maybe I should have started with this one, but I thought the opening scene was really great because we see this little village. They're going about their day. They're farming krill. The girl's just playing, catching a frog, and it felt very sort of local and kind of unlike what we usually see in the Star Wars universe, right? It was a new corner of the universe that I felt like we don't see, almost like regular people going about their day-to-day lives instead of, you know, the Skywalker family or all these like big political events that are happening.
It felt very Star Trek to me, like when they find a new group of people on Star Trek. Oh, you're not a big Star Trek fan, Chris, huh?
No, I'm not a Star Trek fan, so I have no idea what you're talking about, but...
a good one-third of their shows started like that.
Okay, well, I mean, it's... For me, it was a little bit new for Star Wars, and then, of course, these raiders attack, and all of a sudden, we're pulled right back into typical Star Wars stuff, which I'm okay with, because typical Star Wars stuff is what I'm here for, but I just liked it. I liked how it opened that way, and it felt peaceful and a little bit different, and I appreciated getting some insight into what the regular folks were doing in this case, you know, because it's a huge universe and there's lots of people that have nothing to do with lightsabers and the Force and, you know, bounty hunters and all this kind of stuff. So
politics, anything.
And I also liked how they had droids that were just kind of in the background, farming these little shrimpy things, pulling them out of the ponds, you know? It just felt like a regular life for people, and I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned the droid that was walking around in the rice paddy there, or the krill patties, I guess you would call it, right? And how the kids in the background were playing with a ball fashioned out of sticks.
Amazing.
I mean, they got... Yeah, it's like when you give a kid an expensive gift and they play in the cardboard box. You know what I mean? Come on, they got tech. Didn't they have better toys than a ball made out of sticks?
I mean, it should be hovering at least or something.
Yeah, right. That cracked me up.
I was like, why do they have an astromech droid? Those are for interstellar navigation and light repairs. But now I feel like the comic book guy from The Simpsons. So
you kind of look like him too. I don't know what it is. Sorry.
So that sort of leads into my number one, which is my now traditional lore and callbacks item. And the first one on the list is Planet Sorgan, which is this planet that he goes to. No starport, no industrial centers, no population density. From what I could find, this is the first time in Star Wars that we've ever heard of this planet. But he calls it a backwater skunk hole. And I think Tatooine was often referred to as backwater. And that reminded me of how Tatooine is basically mine and Richard's hometown of Modesto, California, because George Lucas comes from Modesto and he wrote American Graffiti about teenagers wanting to get the hell out of there. And then he did Star Wars, which is basically the same story except in space, where Luke wants to get off this crappy desert planet.
Wow, thanks.
I had
now
no idea you guys were from from Tatooine. That's amazing.
Yeah, Richard, how's Modesto?
Yeah, I'm still here. Wow, that was great. Thanks, Jay. Oh,
sorry.
One of you got out and one of you didn't. That's amazing.
I just was back there yesterday. It's not so bad.
Yeah, when you don't live here.
Me and Rich watched Mandalorian. Then let's see. The cat thing in the bar is a Loth cat, which was featured in Star Wars Rebels. And this is the first time seeing it live action. Wikipedia says Loth cats are members of the Tuca family and native to Lothal, often found in the grassy plains of the Outer Rim planet. They're small, temperamental creatures, and while at times friendly, are still able hunters with sharp teeth and claws. They feast on Loth rats.
Cool.
Yeah, now I kind of want to go back and watch those series. I did watch a lot of Clone Wars, but somehow I got derailed, and I think I got halfway through and didn't finish it, but now I want to go back. There's some really good ones in there. So the barkeep in the saloon that he goes to first, I really like that saloon, by the way, with its kind of open air feeling. It reminded me of Center Camp at Burning Man for any burners out there. But anyways, the barkeep offers him a flagon of spotchka, which is a beverage created from this krill that they farm, the little crustaceans. And I think those hot tub looking things with the glowing blue liquid in the bandits area was them making that drink, spotchka. I was wondering, you know, I think the whole point of this was that they loved that so much that they wanted to go in and steal all the krill. I think that's pretty much all they wanted from the villagers, was to steal their krill so they could make this drink.
Right. Yeah. Kind of like a hooch. Moonshine.
Yeah,
that's what one of the guys says. He says they came in and destroyed or stole our entire harvest, right? So they were going after the krill.
Yeah. And those guys are Clatooinian from the planet Clatooine, which I think rhymes with Tatooine, which is in Hutt space in the Outer Rim territories. They often work as henchmen and bounty hunters. Some are Jedi, though. At least one Tarados Gon can be seen fighting in the Battle of Geonosis in Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, with his Jedi robes and his lightsaber. And we covered a lot of the other stuff I had, the AT-ST, the tracking fobs, Cara Dune's shock trooper background. A couple of callbacks I mentioned, you know, Mandalorian not helping the villagers unless there's something in it for him, totally reminds me of Han Solo's selfish, uncaring attitude when we first meet him. But then that changes by the end of the first movie. The primitive against technically advanced is like the Ewoks. Yeah, I guess right. I talked about all this stuff. The only last thing I have here is just, I haven't mentioned it because I didn't notice it, but someone brought it up that they're also doing the Star Wars standard wipe fades in between scenes. You know what I mean? Where it like wipes across the screen into the next scene.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's been in every Star Wars movie and stuff as far as I know. And I'm totally fine with it.
Yeah.
That's cool. I noticed that, but I didn't notice that till just now.
Me too. Until someone mentioned it.
What did you say? The indigenous population there, the raiders, what were they called?
Clatooinian.
Clatooinians. The Klaatu part reminds me of Evil Dead. Evil Dead 3, right? Still,
yeah.
Klaatu Viridas Nikto.
Nikto. Hamshabama. Notes, Richard.
I wrote down, I noticed that the child had a little tiny Jedi robe on. I thought that was pretty cute there. And I was thinking, too, as the episode was going on, this kid must understand some language because, I mean, he, there's no facial expressions from Mando that he can use. I mean, I suppose he could use some body language, but when Mando tells him to do stuff or tells him, you know, to knock stuff off, he kind of understands. So I wonder if that's going to come into play a little later, you know, if he like just busts out starting talking or something like that.
Yes, man. This episode featured the child a lot, and I started thinking about all the logistics involved with traveling around with this kid and how easy or difficult it would be for the Mandalorian, because the child can walk, obviously, and it seems to understand him, or at least has some level of comprehension.
Right.
He needs an iPad for him to like keep him busy in the car and
something like that.
He's going to change diapers and all that stuff. Yeah.
Well, exactly. I started thinking, does the Mandalorian have to change diapers? Does it even wear diapers? Like,
right.
It eats frogs, but does it eat anything else? Like, has he given him any food other than letting him find his own frogs and all the things that, you know, traveling with a baby can be pretty hard.
Truth.
And here he is. He's just flying around. Basically telling him to like stay here and then he doesn't and stop touching things and then he doesn't and I don't know if he eats or whatever, you know, so
you know, I also had a thought about the helmets too watching this show. You know how they have the helmets at the beginning of each episode?
Yeah,
I thought hey, you know what, this is like in the old West when people had guns. Everybody had guns because it was a tool. It was what you needed to survive. So these people have helmets because they're spacefaring people. It's a necessary tool for survival. So they personalize it, you know, they increase its functionality, make it look cool. I think helmets are a big deal.
Well, in this one, we also see that he can see recently made footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Turned red.
Yeah,
so that's a new skill we didn't
totally
know
functional.
About before.
Yeah.
It is. And I think that I think he has some sort of helmet or camera assisted vision, because let's be honest, the little tiny slit where he looks through, he wouldn't be able to see anything out of that. Like peripheral vision, none. So I think it's cool when we see through his Mando's like eyes and see what he sees. It feels like he's not looking out the actual eye slits. He's
like
looking at some kind of display. Exactly.
Like Iron Man or something. Yeah, maybe you're right. It would be funny if we saw his view and you just can barely see anything through this little slit.
Yeah.
Where'd everybody go?
It wouldn't work so well.
I haven't been able to see since I was a kid, just like those guys. Chris, any notes?
No, I don't think so, man. I think we covered most of it there. I wanted to talk about the child a little bit and the logistics of diaper changing, but we covered it.
Yeah, we covered most of mine. I didn't like seeing the gun sight trained on Baby Yoda, but I didn't for one second think that guy was going to... Even when I heard the shot, I think that's Kara, so...
Yeah, you just kind of know that they're not going to kill Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
And then the villagers... They all wore these gray robes with these like turquoise embellishments, like kind of rag-like. It felt a little thrown together to me, and it totally did remind me of populations we see in Star Trek a lot. Right, Rich?
Yeah,
they all kind
totally.
Of look the same.
needing saving.
Yeah, yeah. But I shouldn't have ended on that down note, because as you can tell by what we all just said, we liked the episode a lot. It was cool.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I give it an A-.
Nice.
That's pretty good rating.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a little break. There is more to come. Stay with us. I will build my world. I will sing my songs. I will keep my helmet on. Oh, I will build my world. I will sing my songs. I will keep my helmet on. Okay, some news. I don't have a lot of news this week, but I just had this one that's kind of funny. So Mandalorian co-writer and co-director Dave Filoni said that when they considered replacing the Baby Yoda puppet with a CGI version of the character, Werner Herzog, who plays the client, acted with contempt on set. What happened was, after a take using the puppet, the crew got ready for another take without the puppet, quote, in case they decided during post-production that the puppet wasn't convincing enough and a digital version had to be substituted. And Herzog said, "You are cowards. Leave it."
Wow. Tell us how you really feel.
Yeah, and he obviously knows what he's talking about because it's working.
Right? Yeah. He's a big director. I don't know his work. I should look into it. But they obviously have a lot of reverence for him. Anyway, he was totally right.
He was.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into some listener feedback, Rich.
All right. Lena Uroz Winter writes in, "I loved it. I knew going in that it was a riff on the old cowboy saving a town, but even being spoiled by that didn't take anything away from it for me. I can't help but get a big smile on my face whenever Baby Yoda does pretty much anything, even though I keep expecting to get tired of that storyline. I really enjoyed the Kara character and seeing new places and people. Plus, seeing the Walker was badass.
Very, very badass. John Bucket writes, classic Western story. Loved how scary they made the previously cool but slightly comical AT-ST. Got some more Mando info too. Getting a Samurai Jack vibe with this show, which I also love. Looking forward to the podcast. Big smiley face.
Brian Milosh says, better than the first two, but not as good as last week's episode. I did enjoy it, though. One big plus for this week, it's longer. When an episode of a TV show that I watch is less than 40 minutes, unless you know that going in that it's a 30-minute show, I feel cheated. This one was over 40 minutes with all the credits. They really need to amp up the Baby Yoda merch. I don't know. I didn't feel that. I actually kind of liked that they were shorter because it told me that they were just like, we're going to make these episodes as long as they need to be and not stretch them out, you know, or add some filler in just to get it padded out to 45 minutes or an hour or whatever.
Yeah. Short and tight and leave us wanting more. That's always good. But Brian has been a little down, I feel like, on the show, at least to start. So I'm glad that he was into it.
You're right. Yeah. I think he's coming around.
Yeah.
Michael Darwin, honestly, was not a fan. I know that this is supposed to be a homage to certain tropes, but Seven Samurai? This is a horse that has been beaten to death by the time they did it in Battlestar Galactica. Even so, it might have been better if the performances were less stilted and the sets less fake. Damn. The red-eyed walker was cool, though.
I hear where you're coming from on that.
Maybe, but I don't know about the sets. I think the sets looked great.
Yeah, actually, you're right. I was thinking more about the costuming, but yeah, the sets, I think, were cool.
All right, Sherry Morford says, he took his helmet off in full view of the village, but did anyone see him? Nothing was said about it. Regardless, I love this episode, and I love the show.
No one saw him, or else he'd have to take it off forever.
Yeah. Exactly, and that would not work.
Ben Beck says, I think this show just keeps getting better and better, and seeing Bryce Dallas Howard's name as director made me even more impressed with the episode.
Grippy Bob Dobolino writes, it was, three amigos, Baby Yoda, so adorable, my eyes are now bleeding.
Oh my God, that was so adorable, it made my eyes bleed.
That's pretty adorable.
Yeah, it really is
adorable.
I can't take it anymore.
Yeah. Next, we have some emails. This first one is from Todd Hill. And Todd writes, hi, Rich, Chris, and Jason. I really liked the third episode. And I'm sorry, that I
either forgot or maybe they came in too late about the previous episodes.
All right. Todd Hill, I really liked the third episode. And I noticed a little Easter egg while watching it. When Mando goes back to get the kid and he is running around in the client's place, I noticed that some of the boxes look a lot like the companion cubes from the game Portal. I just wondered if any of you noticed that too. I think it's great how they are squeezing in little funny references from other things into the show. I love the podcast and can't wait to hear what you guys think.
I looked it up because I didn't notice, and they are exactly the same, which I think is totally cool because Portal is my favorite game of all time. So thanks for letting me know about that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I love it. I love Portal 2, and I wish they'd make more, but
I know.
I didn't really pick up on the companion cube comparison here, but yeah. Cool.
No,
very cool.
I'll send you a screenshot.
Nice.
Cool. Speaking of Portal, which is made by Valve, this is a little bit of an aside, but did you guys know that Valve is making another Half-Life game?
I did hear that, and I look forward to it because Half-Life was awesome as well.
But it's a VR.
Oh, crap.
Which I'm like, man. God darn it. I have to get a PC and a VR, and I want to find a way to do it because I really want to play that. It looks like it's going to advance VR to the next level. They talked about, the reason why I bring this up is they talked about, you know, basically they just wanted to make a great game for VR and they were deciding which one. And they originally considered Portal, but since Portal flings you around so much, they thought it would just make everybody sick. So they decided to do it Half-Life instead. But I think it's like so cool that they were even considering making another Portal game.
You know, they're probably not wrong about that. I have a VR setup at work. I've only ever used it at my office. And some of the games where you do get, can jump around or flung around really do make me feel nauseous. So I avoid those. But
yeah,
boy, I don't know if I get this at work, I'm going to be tempted to never come home and my family's not going to be happy with that.
I might come visit you.
Yeah.
Okay. So it begins.
Do it, man.
Okay. End up being a $3,000 game by the time you get all the equipment.
That's right. I was looking it up already. I'm like, what's the cheapest I can get in on? Chris French says, I don't know if by this time the universe is aware of Yoda or how popular Yoda is among the galaxy, but one thing is for sure. Mando saw the child use the Force. Hence, it's a little Jedi. Knowing that Mandalorians and the Jedi have a deep-seated hatred for each other, this is the explanation as to why he called him his enemy. And he also said the child didn't know he was his enemy. This really provides some good depth to the character because now we know how conflicted he is between following his Mandalorian culture and doing what's right by saving a baby. That said, and if true, then why would the other Mandalorians help him escape with it? But maybe the answer is that they didn't know exactly who is this baby or what it can do.
Good point. It's probably just backing up their brother.
Yeah. I think that is a possibility that's why he called him his enemy. But he seems so confused about the Force that I'm not so sure about that. And I think I'm sticking to my original explanation that he just considered all his bounties as, you know, something that he had to watch out for and work against and control. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
versus the Mandalorian's justification. Dislike of the Jedi.
I think it's probably the simplest explanation, which is usually the right one, but you never know.
Right.
You never know.
Occam's razor.
Yeah.
All right, from Simon Ludbors. Mando totally knew what he was doing when he shot Grief in the Beskar Steel. He's just that good.
Ooh.
Love the cast. Love you guys are back with Chris. I can finally move on after Evil Dead cast has finished.
Just waiting for you to read that last line.
Oh, shit. Sorry. I was at the bottom of my screen.
I'm like, we can't go on until...
No.
What's he doing? I have spoken.
Oh. And then we got one call from our ever loyal and trusty Steve Brown.
Hello, guys. It's Steve, and another great episode of The Mandalorian Sanctuary. Really, really liked. Again, I'm liking all these episodes. There's nothing bad. Standout moments were definitely we learned that he does take his helmet off. He just doesn't do it in front of people. And but. Did you think it was a little weird when he took it off and he's sitting at a window staring out? Because what if somebody just walks by? Or I wasn't sure about that. I thought that's kind of interesting. He seems pretty open there, or in the open at least. love Gina Carano's character, Kara, and I hope they find some way to bring her back. And it's unfortunate that those tracking fobs can track the child as far as they have. Did you get a little Army of Darkness feel when she was training the villagers there with the sticks? I kind of got that. And this, you could definitely see the influence, the Kurosawa influence, the old Western kind of influence of the you know, the gunslinger coming into town and getting hired to protect the town kind of vibe. Really, really, I loved it. I thought it was excellent. And, I can't wait for next week. It's really cool that we have kind of an episodic. This has become kind of an episodic show. Would that be the right way of putting it? Right, because basically each episode is its own contained story. So can't wait to see what they're going to do next, and can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
I like that Army of Darkness connection.
Yeah, totally.
I forgot about that too.
Shame on us. All right, Rich, what's coming up next week?
So next week's Chapter 5, as yet untitled. The tagline is, "The Mandalorian helps a rookie bounty hunter who is in over his head." Directed by Dave Filoni, written by Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau.
So Dave Filoni's back directing, and this one sounds like another sort of one-off in a way. He's helping another bounty hunter who's in over his head.
Yeah.
Interesting. On
probably a different planet, huh?
Yeah.
Wonder probably. Who it's going to be. Someone we've seen before. I bet it's a new character. There's some actors that we've heard are going to be a part of this show that haven't come up yet. There's that comedian guy, Bill Burr.
Is that his name? Oh, really? Bill Burr's in this?
Yeah. Which is funny because he is famous for giving people shit for liking Star Wars.
He's great.
Look at you now, Bill. Look at you now.
You're in it. And then there's Giancarlo Esposito, which I don't think that's going to be him, but it might be Bill Burr. This is the first one not written exclusively by Jon Favreau, but I'm sure he's involved with the story for all of them. And if I'm not wrong, I think Dave Filoni has actually never directed a live action thing before this, even though he's been heavily involved with the Star Wars series and everything.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's directed tons of animated, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, you know what? I was just going to say about Giancarlo Esposito. Like, I'm kind of surprised he hasn't been introduced yet. Here we are halfway through the first season. So I'm looking forward to finding out who he is, but I wonder if they're going to do something insane, like introduce him in the last episode, setting up season two or something like
that. Yeah.
Because he hasn't been around yet.
Right.
Well, because they all do seem pretty self-contained, I think maybe he'll be in a self-contained episode, you know, and then maybe his character will show up. And it's I'm just thinking about it now. Like, there's a difference between the episodes being self-contained stories and it being formulaic. And I'm totally cool with the self-contained that maybe advances the plot a little, but mostly it's about whatever story pops up that week. I just don't want to kind of know what that story type is going to be every week beforehand, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and you're right. There's a difference between self-contained and unrelated or not important, you know? Like, we can have self-contained episodes that are still important, that introduce new characters like we had this week, that maybe they won't be back immediately in the next two or three episodes, but maybe Cara Dune will be back for the finale and then be a huge part moving forward. You know, we don't know.
And I think every episode so far, too, has deepened the Mandalorian's character. We learn more about him, or he has decisions to make that are important.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was fun. If you want to write in or record a message like Steve Brown and send it in, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We are also on Twitter and Instagram at housepodcastica. And of course, Steve Brown is fantastic, but listeners, write in or call in more. We would love to get more voice messages from everybody.
Yeah, let's hear from some women. That'd be cool. I know there's some out there because they write it. And please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. You can find my Walking Dead podcast there, and you can find Chris's Talking Dead podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
We'll be back soon. Don't touch anything.